I like Corbin Burns.
He's going to be a starter.
What about Corbin Creamerman?
I don't know who that is. I don't get that reference.
Heir to the Creamerman Creamery. I think Bojack Horseman.
I think you're just making this shit up right now. Corbin Creamery. Creamery.
I make Corbin. So many Bojack references, Bojack Horseman references on this pod, and I don't think either of you get them.
No, I don't watch that show.
Welcome to Dynasty's Child.
We're not recording.
We are recording.
Oh, well.
Hosted by Patrick Magnus.
Look at yourself in the mirror, you're a goddamn mess.
Featuring Keaton DeRocher.
Cut everything after he praised me.
And featuring Jake Devereaux.
He wants everybody to know that he has a very impressive package.
Produced by Adam Lawler.
Hey, you guys. Hey, everybody.
Start over.
Yep, why don't you try that one more time.
Brought to you by the Dynasty Guru.
What's a good launch angle?
What's a good launch angle?
What's a good launch angle?
Yeah, what's a good launch angle?
What's up, nerds? Welcome to Dynasty's Child, your flagship fantasy baseball podcast for the Dynasty Guru, with a focus on Dynasty formats. I am your fill-in host, again, Keaton DeRocher, because Patrick is feeling sick, although he is on the pod, just didn't want to do a whole lot of talking. That makes sense. We'll allow it.
Thank you.
Patrick, are you surviving? And many people have been asking us if you made it out of the bathroom okay in Japan.
I did, in fact, make it out of the bathroom okay in Japan. It was a struggle, though. And I'll tell you what, those heated toilets. Why does anybody even want to get out of that bathroom?
Yeah, there you go. Also, joined, we got ourselves a full house once again. The boys are back together. Jake Devereaux, how you doing?
Doing great. I don't have a heated toilet, though, so now I'm feeling kind of jealous.
Have you ever use a heated piece with a bidet?
Yep. You're asking me in my butt?
Just everyone in general. No, that's the dream right there. That's the throne.
Listen, Japan really has toilets, right? That's right in Japan's alley. I'm a big fan of heated toilets and bidets. All right.
Cosign Japanese toilets.
Fantastic.
Hey, how were the games?
The games were freaking awesome, and I have several takeaways. Ramon Liriano looked like garbage, as is no secret to anybody that has watched him recently, but he looked terrible. And Steven Piscotty's power is legit. That's something I took away. He has a bat that is more impressive than I thought. That was another one. I spoke with an athletic scout and just about peed my pants because I was like, oh my God, I do a Dynasty podcast, but I didn't say that out loud to him. It was pretty rad. and he told me that they were going to put Lizardo in the rotation before this injury that we'll talk about a little later, but he was going to make the team.
Great.
Damn.
So you didn't tweet that out because you would have been wrong.
I didn't.
You should have. That was your perfect opportunity to use hashtag sources.
Oh, fuck. Can't win them all.
It.
Did you exchange information so now you can get the inside scoop on the A's?
I follow him on Twitter, but he has not tweeted a single tweet once. So,
like ever?
Ever.
Wow. It's a good thing he's on Twitter then.
Oh, I also met Kaz, which is something we should talk about. I met Kaz and he was freaking awesome. He's a writer for our website, although I don't think he's written anything in a long time. he writes mostly about Japanese baseball, but he was a super cool dude. Really chill. And he takes his baseball very seriously. It was cool to sit with him for a bit and watch the game because he had his stopwatch and radar gun and was taking notes. And it was cool to learn from him a bit about the game. He's really a smart dude. You should follow him on Twitter if you don't already.
I agree. I got the pleasure of meeting Kaz at the White Sox Baseball Prospectus ballpark event last year. Tremendous man.
Yeah.
Great baseball guy. You should definitely give him a follow.
I like Kaz.
Alrighty, so on this show, we'll go over a whole host of injuries, a giant wave of signings. We'll talk about our fantasy teams for the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational and our own Dynasty's Child Listener League, which kicked off with its first season and drafts this year. We'll talk about our approach to both of those, some picks we liked, some reaches, just kind of things that were going on. And we'll wrap it up with some listener questions. And then next week, we will begin our top pod spec segment once again and start building up our 2019 bracket of top pod specs. So you can look forward to that on the next pod. This is episode 69, so that one will be episode
70. Nice.
Diving into some transactions. The first one, the biggie, the big old biggie, Mike Trout signed a 12-year, $430 million extension 2 years before he was to become a free agent. Jake, initial thoughts on that behemoth?
So if anyone can get that deal and still be underpaid, it's Mike Trout. That was my first thought, is just that if he ever went to the open market, yeah, he could have gotten so much more. I legitimately think you could have been talking about a $550 to $600 million deal. I was a little bummed out because, like, you want to see Trout be in the playoffs deep every single year, and it's hard to see that happening with the Angels, although, you know, they have done a good job of rebuilding their farm system, and they do try and spend money, but they're just kind of handcuffed with deals like the Pujols thing and stuff like that, and free agency just isn't what it used to be. But on the plus side, Angels fans get to keep the best player in baseball, and, you know, he's a super loyal, super cool guy, and it is cool to see one guy be the iconic guy for that franchise for forever. And so he's pretty much going to finish up his career there, and I think that's a good thing in a lot of ways. So happy for the guy.
Patrick, your thoughts?
I'm pissed. I'm just super pissed. He should have been a free agent. Come on. You deserve to be a free agent and have teams woo over you and throw all sorts of crazy money. And we could have had a crazy offseason of people just being like, well, similar to Bryce Harper. I guess that wasn't all that cool. But I wish that he would have been a free agent. I think it would have been good for the players. Because now, I don't know if you've noticed, but everyone is signing a freaking extension. And I don't know. I would like to see the highest bidder get the best player.
Yeah, I guess I was surprised that it happened 2 years before he became a free agent, but I think he's deserved every dollar of that he got. So I think it's kind of neat. I'm with Jake. I think it's neat that he's going to stay with the same team for pretty much his whole career. If I had to wager a guess, I would say they'll probably make the playoffs eventually during that 12 years, and hopefully he can get himself a World Series. That'd be great. I think he should get one.
Just, I mean, might make it this year. They could be better than the A's this year.
That pitcher needs to stay healthy, though. Well, that's a problem.
They're not better than the A's. No one's better than the A's. Except for
there's a lot of teams that are better than the A's, Patrick.
No, there's not.
The Red Stockings.
Cleveland.
Yeah, by the way, I listened to this last podcast. You guys are the biggest Red Sox homers in the world. The Yankees have a better team, in my opinion, than the Red Sox this year.
You're an idiot.
They do not have a better team.
I think they're
without Severino for like 2 months.
Yeah, but they got Herman, man. I'm all about the Yankees.
Get out of my face, Patrick.
Yeah, I'm up in your face right now, guy. I'm telling you guys, I'm calling it. The Yankees are going to win the AL East.
I don't really think it's going out on a limb.
I don't care, Keaton. I just listened to you. I listened to you guys, and I wanted to get the truth out. Let people know we're not just Red Sox homers, even though I hate the Yankees.
Did you listen to the picks? Because I don't think either of us picked the Red Sox to go to the World Series.
No.
Oh, Jake did.
But I had them losing.
Yeah. I didn't even have them in the World Series.
Yeah, you guys both oddly picked Washington to win the World Series.
We did.
That was quite a surprise for me.
Yeah.
But good on you.
It was actually quite a surprise for us, too. We did not tell each other that we were both going to pick Washington.
Yeah. So, speaking of homer deals, Chris Sale signed a 5-for-$145 extension with the Red Sox. I personally enjoy Chris Sale pitching on the Red Sox, and I am excited that he is going to be doing that for many more years to come. Jake, do you agree?
Yeah, I'm excited about the deal. He was one of the big guys that the team needed to lock up, because after this season, Sale was going to be a free agent along with Xander Bogaerts and Rick Porcello. The deal is kind of interesting. It's 5-for-$145 instead of 6-for-$160, which they were talking about, because they were going to try and restructure this year as well. But I guess with some deferrals of the money, they're going to get the luxury tax number for the deal down to $25.6 million per season. Because if you do it out, it averages out to like $30 or $29 million or something like that. There is an opt-out as well after 3 years. So that's kind of interesting. I like the idea of locking up Chris Sale. I am a little nervous that, you know, towards the end of the deal, it's not going to be great, and he could have some durability issues. But for the next 3 years, I'm very confident that Chris Sale is going to perform like one of the best pitchers in all of baseball, and that's really all that I care about right now. So I love it.
I mean, they must be pretty confident too. I think the opt out after 3 years is essentially like, go ahead, man. You know, it was kind of, which I think was kind of the idea with David Price too. You know, he had the opt out, I think, after the first 2 years of his contract in a 7 year deal.
Yep.
And I think the idea was like, you know, okay, after your age, you know, 33 season or whatever, you can pack it up and go test the free agent market and get paid somewhere else. But that didn't quite work out as planned, or at least as I thought it would. But yeah, I agree. I'm stoked to see Chris Sale in a Red Sox uniform. Every day he pitches is a event. So I'm pleased. And if he's bad at the tail end of that deal, whatever, he deserves the money and he deserves the deal.
Alex Bregman signed a 6-year, $100 million extension with the Astros. That, to me, seemed a little bit light for a player of his caliber. Although he has had some injury issues. Of all the extensions that were handed out, this one and the Snell one were kind of the most confusing to me. But I wonder what you guys thought. Jake, what did you think?
Sorry, I was on mute. I thought it was smart by Alex Bregman, because I believe it bought out a few of his arb years, and I'm not positive how many of those arb years it bought out. But he gets, let me see. I don't think I can tell that on here, but you know, he's getting a good chunk of money for years where he would have been basically fighting for his proper salary. And I believe that it was 3 years that were bought out of his arbitration. So I don't know. I'm going to try and check that while we're on here, but it's always better to have the money up front. And I think that this whole trend that we saw here just kind of speaks to what we have going on in baseball, is guys are trying to get their money right now, because I think that they're legitimately afraid that a labor stoppage is going to come in the next 2 years.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I would say I agree with Keaton that this and the Snell deal were the sort of the most odd deals that came. They were a little odd and they were a little light, it felt like. But with Bregman, I mean, 100 mil, I guess you gotta take that. I mean, I know I would. And if it's true that it bought out the several arb years, that's even better.
Yeah, so I just found it here. Mark Berman of Fox tweeted out, deal covers this year and 3 years he'd be eligible for arbitration, plus the first 2 years Alex can become a free agent. So really all he did was delay his arbitration, his free agency by 2 years and guarantees himself $100 million.
Well, then I suppose that's pretty smart, Jake, huh?
I dig it.
So, general philosophical question here. Do you think that the players are signing the deal because they expect guaranteed contracts are going to go away and they want to get locked into guaranteed money now?
I don't know if they expect guaranteed money to go away completely, but I think that there's enough concern over the fact that there is so many free agents not getting paid. And then also, I think teams are making an effort to sort of say, hey, even though we're taking away free agency, we're paying younger players now. That's what I see a lot of these extensions as, like Brandon Lowe, Blake Snell, Alex Burt, Bregman. You know, I see these as deals as like the teams trying to put like a sort of redeem themselves a bit. But they're such, these deals seem so team friendly. I know that they're for young players that they're it's great to guarantee that money, but they're still really team friendly. And I don't know. Yeah, that's where I'm at. I'm wrestling with it. I'm pissed about it in a lot of ways because I feel like I really don't like how teams are avoiding free agency and not paying players.
I actually don't know if I hate it that much because, like, when you look at the Snell deal, on the surface, it seems ridiculous that you could give 5 and 50 to the guy who just won the Cy Young. But when you look at it, what you're doing there is you're buying out all of his arbitration years and just delaying his free agency by one season there. And you're guaranteeing a guy $50 million of earnings against, you know, injury. And we know from talking to, you know, Dr. Mike on here that there's just no guarantees in this game. It could be a shoulder, it could be an elbow, it could be a botched Tommy John. I mean, any of these things can happen to these guys at any time. And $50 million is a good chunk of change here. So I like it from that perspective. And also the other thing that's not talked about enough is it avoids arbitration, which itself I think can be damaging to player and team. We've seen a lot of times that team and player create a lot of animosity against one another when they go to arbitration, because essentially what you're doing is the team is arguing why they shouldn't pay you and what's wrong with you, and you're arguing for why you should get paid. And oftentimes players come out feeling worse about their team than they would have otherwise. And what this does is, you know, it might, they might pay a little bit more upfront for these guys and extend out that free agency a little bit, but like now the Rays or the Astros don't ever have to say anything publicly like bad about their players in arbitration. So, well, there's something to be said for that.
They should just pay them, is my opinion. I don't know. Like, don't go to arbitration. Just pay your player. I think a lot of times that, you know, it's just for me, the teams are the big bad corporate entity. And, like, I see them locking up younger players like this. And I just, it's great to lock up that guaranteed money. But at the same time, it's just like, how many ways can you save money? Players deserve to get paid more, in my opinion. I know that sounds ridiculous, you know, as they're millionaires, but it's millionaires versus billionaires. And I just want to see the players get as big a chunk of the pie as they can. And I feel like deals like this kind of rob them of that opportunity. And whereas I get what you're saying about sort of the relationship that comes with arbitration and the damage that it can do, then the team should just be paying their players more. That's where I'm at.
Paul Goldschmidt signed an extension with his brandy new team. 5 years, $130 million. This one was probably the least surprising of all the extensions. We kind of assumed once St. Louis got their paws on him, this was going to happen, right?
Yeah, that was the assumption when they traded for him, that at his age and with how good he is and the team he was going to, that this was something that they would be working on basically as soon as he got traded. So no surprise there. Happy that they got that done. And Goldie was on a super favorable team deal for a while during some of his best seasons. So I'm really happy that he is going to get himself a nice payday because that man deserves it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on this one, Jake. And yeah, it was expected. I mean, and now the Cardinals have a middle of the order bat for the next 5 years. So, I'm all for it. And Keaton's all for it too. He told me.
Yes, Blake Snell, 550. We kind of touched on that one. We can probably move on. Tampa also locked up Brandon Lowe, or Lau, however that's pronounced. 6 years, $24 million.
Couple of team options in there too.
Yeah, he's the Lau of the Lowe's. He's the Lau. This is great, I think, in the sense that for fantasy players, and that you know that he's probably going to get everyday playing time. So, I think they have a sort of a middle infield conundrum with Joey Wendell and Daniel Robertson, and now Brandon Lau. This kind of deal, he's not going to be a bench player. He should be playing every day, whether it's in the outfield or in the infield. So I think for dynasty purposes, you got to be pleased if you own him right now.
Yeah, it seems like second base is his, but there's always Vidal Brujan lurking.
My man.
And this buys out like everything for him. He had full years of team control and arb years bought out with this. So this is very team friendly.
Well, it's good to see a small market team get a win. Eloy Jimenez signed a 6 year, $43 million contract, and this is similar to Lau's. That buys out everything. All team control, arb years at 43. And surprisingly cured all of Eloy's defensive issues, as he'll now break camp. So it's weird how money is what solved all of his defensive struggles.
Is that solid? Is he breaking camp?
Yes.
Woo! That's awesome.
That is awesome.
It is.
We get to see
Eloy.
A full year of Eloy Jimenez at the big league level. He's going to crush.
He's got a locker next to Moncada, for whatever that's worth.
I hope he smashes Moncada with a bat.
I hope Moncada smashes him with a bat. Hey,
that no violence with bats is committed on each other.
I hope they actually, at the same time, they'll connect with their bats, and then a lightning bolt will strike, and they'll switch bodies, because that's how those things work. With the might of their swings colliding.
Seems like they should make a movie out of this.
I agree.
I'd watch it.
We should start pitching this, guys. This is gold.
What should we call it?
Yoan Monloy.
Freaky Southside Day?
Yeah, I like that better.
The Southside Swapperoo.
Oh, God damn. You guys something. Are good.
Justin Verlander also signed an extension. 2 years, $66 million. That seems to make a whole lot of sense for the Astros. I'm on board with that.
Yep.
Yeah, that's an awesome deal. He's getting $33 million a year. I believe that makes him the highest paid pitcher in baseball in terms of AAV. It's only for a short period of time. And Houston has a ton of their pitchers coming up for free agency. Really soon, Garrett Cole and he were due for that, as well as Colin McHugh, and I think maybe Peacock as well, a few of the guys that they have. So they really did need to start locking some of these guys up. And hilariously enough, with all these extensions happening, options are just shrinking for teams that used to rely on free agents really heavy. And you have to just sit here and laugh at teams that skipped on Harper and Machado as all these guys sign. And like, oh, we'll go after Arenado, or we'll go after Trout, or whatever, and they just keep signing. So it's awesome, and I hope that all those stupid teams that just signed free agents start thinking more about their behavior.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have much more to add to that.
Alrighty, so moving on to some other stuff. Rumors, Kimbrel to Milwaukee or Atlanta. Is that back? That's happening? I thought that had died at one point. Makes sense for Milwaukee now that Corey Knebel's hurt.
Evil Knebel?
Yeah.
Yeah, the yeah, not so... I mean, so...
it makes sense for both teams.
Yeah, more so for Milwaukee, I think, at this point, although I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, the Braves have got Max Fried in the bullpen, Jake.
Yeah, cool.
Ichiro retired. End of an era. That was a nice moment that he was able to do that in Japan. That was cool. I enjoyed that.
I enjoyed it too. And obviously my favorite Ichiro moment now is seeing him in Tokyo. But why do they play music live for these kind of moments? It makes me so mad. Sometimes you'll see a big home run in the playoffs, and they'll play like music like bam 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 dan dan dan. Like, fuck off. You don't need to engineer this stuff. Like, just let it happen, MLB. And like with Ichiro, like, that was such a great moment mucked up by your cheesy stupid music. It made me really mad. So sorry, I needed to get that out.
I do not feel strongly about the music at all.
Really? It's awful. It's so awful. It makes me so mad. I just...
Honestly, I didn't even notice it during that, like, as he's coming off and waving to the crowd and everything until you mentioned it. I hadn't even noticed it.
Oh, God. It drives me nuts. You just don't play music. You don't need to, MLB. It's so cheesy. So cheesy.
Jake, do you care about music?
I don't care about music, but I care about Ichiro a whole lot, and I want to tell you my favorite moment about Ichiro.
Okay.
You know when the Red Sox signed Daisuke Matsuzaka, and he was like a big deal, and he was coming over? A news guy, some beat reporter, asked Ichiro what he thought about facing Daisuke Matsuzaka in April. And Ichiro was quoted as saying, "I hope he arouses the fire that's dormant in the innermost recesses of my soul. I plan to face him with the zeal of a challenger." That's my favorite Ichiro moment.
That's pretty good.
He's such a nutbag.
Yeah, he is. He's a little loopy.
My favorite Ichiro moment was when Miami finally let him pitch after all these years about hearing how good a pitcher he was. That was fun.
How did he do?
Oh, that's it.
I don't remember. I just remember it was awesome seeing him pitch.
My favorite moment is one that I don't remember.
Well, I mean, the specifics of it. He got a strikeout on somebody.
I mean, he had an absolute hose. He used to throw people out from right field all the time.
Yeah. I mean, he was like the Cespedes before Cespedes.
Oh, he had a way better arm than Cespedes.
He still's got a cannon. He made a fantastic throw in Tokyo. I mean, he still got it, except for the bat speed.
Oh, never mind. He didn't have a strikeout. He gave up one run, two hits in an inning.
Doesn't sound like he did that great.
But it was still fun to watch.
And also, I think I think it made him, I think if I'm correct, that he got to play every position in the MLB.
He caught?
I think he did. There's a way to verify this that I don't know, but I'm
pulling it up right now.
I feel like I vaguely remember him playing every position now.
Nope. Every position in the outfield and one inning at a pitcher.
Hmm. Well,
left field, center field, right field, pitcher for an inning.
Well, so that's swinging wrong. Swinging a miss on my part. I really thought that was
true. I
think
you were thinking of Will Ferrell.
No, I wasn't thinking of Will Ferrell. I mean, I know they're very similar players, but wasn't
who invited this liar on the podcast?
Yeah, right.
They call me Mr. Pants on. They call me Mr. Pants on Fire.
So, did you get any Ichiro swag when you were in Japan?
Natalie, my wife got Ichiro T-shirt. I did not get any swag.
Nice.
Yeah, I got an Oakland Athletics hat. That was my swag.
I saw you donning that hat. It looked pretty good.
Thank you. I really am bummed out because I missed out on a fantastic hat that was the Swingin' A's, similar to the hat I bought, but had Swingin' on it, and I didn't get it. And I'm quite bummed. I went, it was before the game, and Kaz had messaged me, and I was like, oh, all right, I'm going to go see Kaz. I'll come out after and get this. And then I went back after you guys, and guess what?
It was gone.
Sold out. Sold out.
Did you get any Nippon Professional swag?
No, Tokyo's home to the Giants, and so all of the swag was Giant swag. They barely had anything for Nippon, which was a bummer, because they're fun to watch.
Jason Hamill also retired. Guys, what's your favorite Jason Hamill moment?
None.
Zero.
When he got traded to Oakland from Chicago?
Yeah.
He traded back. Didn't he get traded back?
Yeah. I don't know if he got traded back. I think he was signed.
Yeah, I think it was that deal.
Yeah, I don't care about Jason Hamill. Good luck.
All right, option back to the minors. Ian Happ. That one is a little bit surprising, is it not?
Yeah, no, super surprising. I thought he had really established himself as a major leaguer. And he's talented, too. I mean, he's got his flaws in his game. He strikes out way too much, but makes elite contact when he does connect with the ball and is multi-position eligible. And I didn't understand it, really. Sure, maybe he had a bad spring, but don't the years before kind of matter?
I would think so.
I find that some of the Cubs' personnel decisions to be kind of strange. You know, I think they're a little short-sighted sometimes with what they choose to do with their players. And, you know, this is a team we talked about a few years ago as this budding dynasty, and they have traded away or screwed up a lot of their prospects that they did have. So I don't know about the Cubs. I think they won their World Series, and I'm not sure how much longer this whole thing is gonna stick together and be great.
Still have Nico Horner though.
They do.
Yeah,
they've got Nico.
Is Nico Horner gonna make the roster, you guys think?
Probably not, but it seems like it's not going to... I mean, they keep playing him at the big league games here at the end of spring training, so it makes you feel like they're going to try and fast-track him, and maybe we see him this year.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I think that's probably about right.
Willie Calhoun, also optioned. That one was kind of surprising, too.
He had himself a pretty poor spring, though.
Did he come in as a chunky boy again?
I don't know. The not best shape of his life boy? No, not quite sure. I don't,
big ball, chunky that. Time.
That's his thing. Is he's a chunkster who can't really
field
any positions. You know, he's thick.
He's thick, but he's supposed to hit. C's. But he struggled.
Tough to play the old two bag when you're thick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. We got any recent images of him?
Nope, I just ended up looking Big Ball Chunky Time again. By the way, is there a better name for a Texas ball player than Willie Calhoun?
Not many. No, not unless it was Tex from Missouri.
From East Westerton, Missouri?
Yes, sir.
What is Big Ball Chunky Time?
Oh my god, you don't get that?
No, I don't know what that is.
It was on like the MLB official MLB store in Korea. Yeah, on their like official MLB shop in Korea, there's like a little mural of like some memorabilia, and it says it's Big Ball Chunky Time.
I don't understand what it means, but I have seen this.
Neither do I, but I love it.
It's like a picture of different shoes with team names.
Yeah. I think it's like Korea's version of Big Boy Season. It's Big Ball Chunky Time.
I love it.
I'm super into it. Big Ball Chunky Time.
Yeah. That probably needs to be a team name.
Yeah.
All right. I'll take it.
Winning some spots on a major league roster, I'll just rattle them off, and then we can circle back to one that you want to touch on. Brandon Woodruff and Peralta in Milwaukee both getting the squad. It looks like both of them and Corbin Burns are all going to get to start, which is fun. Jung Ho Gung got the third base job at Pittsburgh. Pete Alonso and Dom Smith both made the Mets roster. Blake Swihart going to get some legit at-bats. And Matt Wieters made the Cardinals. So any of those things you want to talk about?
Woody. Woodruff.
Yeah, I'm so, so pumped.
Stoked he made it. He's like the official pitcher of the Dynasty Guru. I think every single person who played in the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational drafted him. And I know that I got him super late as a flyer, and I was just waiting for this moment. And I think that he is like a dark horse to be the best pitcher for Milwaukee this year in their starting rotation. So I'm super stoked about this.
Yeah, he's got easy gas. He's a delight to watch. If he can get that third pitch working for him, he's going to be something special, I think. In the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational, I actually drafted Woodruff and Burns back-to-back. So I'm quite pleased that they both made the rotation.
Well, I'll one-up you because I drafted Woodruff, Peralta, and Burns. Just want to make sure at all the house is covered for who was going to get the rotation spot.
That's amazing. Nice. And they all made it.
That worked out.
Yeah, that's nice.
All right.
I also like Pete Alonso, though, making the Mets right out of camp. I think that's huge, and I think that's a huge statement for the Mets, too, and the new ownership, or not the new ownership, the new leadership, I should say, under Brody Van Wagenen. So,
Brody.
I really like that. He's gonna do some damage this year. He's a beast.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun season to watch.
The Mets will make the playoffs this year.
No.
I mean, if the pitching staff stays healthy, I could see it. It's not outrageous.
No, it's not outrageous. They've definitely got an interesting squad. The moves they made this offseason gave them an actual good lineup. I just don't have faith in the pitching staff being able to stay healthy.
All right, Pete Alonso, Scherzy bet.
Okay, count me in. You know I'm one for gambling on this show. Yeah.
Okay.
Pete Alonso, Scherzy bet.
What's the bet? Oh, the Mets make the playoffs. Got it.
Got it? You got it? Keaton, do you have it?
Pete.
Lock it in.
Alonso, Scherzy, Mets make playoffs. Jake.
Oh, this is great radio.
Don't make playoffs. Patrick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Crazy bet number 5.
Boom. Lock that shit in.
It's not crazy. It's dumb, Keaton.
You're dumb.
You know what they say. Never bet against the Mets.
That is not what they say.
That is something they've never said.
There's a song I like where they say, at least the Mets are getting laid. So, that's something.
Okay.
Huh. Yeah, how about that? Hey, Patrick, you know who's not a swinging athletic?
Who's not a swinging athletic?
Matt Olson, because he's hurt.
Can we just take a moment here?
That was
can
a little
we
just rough. Take,
can we take a moment in here and just grieve? I want to just grieve over Matt Olson's lost season. And I just want I'll talk one. To the listeners.
Pour one out. Let me for just the homies.
Talk. Let me just talk to the listeners for a second. I just want to. Are you okay? It's gonna be okay. This is what baseball does. You become a masochist when you're a baseball fan, and you just have to deal with this hurt. It's going to be a season full of hurt now because I don't think he even has a hamate bone now. I think they just took it out of his body. Is that correct, Keaton?
That is correct.
So, pretty easy. Sure, now you got to watch a full season of, well, it's only 4 to 6 weeks and then he's coming back, but he's not going to be himself. He's not going to hit for power. He's not going to be who he was. And you just got to accept it. And I'm definitely not talking about myself. I'm talking to you about you and you needing to accept it, not me. Okay. There we go.
Well, he's not the only injured, eh? There's Jesus Lizardo.
Yeah.
Way to steal my thunder, man.
It was a tragic series of events, those two getting hurt. I love both those players so much.
Yeah, it's not like that they were two of the more important players on the Oakland Athletics or anything.
Can't talk about it.
Waiting. Keep waiting.
I don't want to wait anymore. I feel like this bit's worn off. Oh, boy.
I really should have had that sad trombone handy.
That was really worth it.
Yeah. Just about as exciting as the watching the Athletics is going to be this year. Rich Hill has a knee issue.
Tragic.
Sorry, Patrick.
That's all right.
Rich Hill has a knee issue, and there are some who believe that's not real.
Yep. Our own Mike, Dr. Mike, believes this is a bit of gamesmanship by the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Wouldn't be the first time. Corey Knebel, he has UCL damage, not a full tear, partial tear. Hurry up and sign Craig Kimbrell.
Agreed.
Andrew Heaney, we talked about on the last pod, but still a bummer. Dylan Betances, shoulder fatigue, no timetable for return. Not a great sign. He says he doesn't feel any pain. He just feels weak. That's not great.
Time to dump him everywhere you got him. You got to get rid of him. That's my call.
You can find hold somewhere else. And then Scooter Jeanette, a severe groin strain. I believe I saw 6 to 8 weeks on that. That's not good.
I even saw as many as 11. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a full 3 months with that sucker.
Yikes.
It's real bad. I guess that thing popped when he was running around, and yeah,
it seems that tends awful. To not be a good thing.
No, and you need your legs under you to hit, so it sucks because this is his year. He was about to go into free agency next year, so he could have used a big one here, but yeah, I'm bummed. I love Scooter.
Jake, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Are you sure you need your legs under you to hit? Are you sure?
I am fairly positive, but there is that guy from Mario who's always on the cloud who like throws off those little spiky guys.
And exactly I feel like where I was going.
Without his legs.
All right.
Okay.
We're on the same page then.
I think his name is Lakitu.
My mind went to Kenny Kawaguchi.
Yep, it is. Lakitu and Spiny.
Kenny's in a wheelchair.
Lakitu is known in Japan as Jujem. He's a fictional flying character in the Mario franchise. And he throws off Spinies.
Huh.
So, yeah, he doesn't need legs.
The more you know.
Yep.
Although Kenny Kawaguchi, I'm looking at his stats, he was a much better pitcher, apparently, than he was a hitter. He has 4 baseballs for pitching, but only 2 for hitting. So maybe that wheelchair affected him. Anyway.
Could be a good bunter.
Let's transition. I got it.
Talking about our fantasy teams now as we enter the Fantasy League segment. We're going to talk about both our teams for the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational and the Dynasty Child Listener League. So what we're going to do is talk about a little bit of our strategy, go around the horn, let's talk about our best values, our biggest reaches, and our favorite picks, just to give you a little bit of strategy insight into how we did. I will start with, we'll do the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational first, and I'll start. So, we had a question a while back about what our strategy is, and for going into these drafts, I tend to just kind of take what the draft gives me, which I had noted usually leads to me losing out on saves, and that is precisely what happened. With this team, just kept going, trying to go best available until we got down to the very end. I need to fill out positions. And the first closer we took was Archie Bradley, very late. And he's not even guaranteed to have that job. So we paired that with Jose Alvarado. And those are all the saves I got. So we'll see how that goes. Steals also usually tends to fall by the wayside with that strategy, but actually pretty rounded with steals. So I feel pretty good about that. But that was kind of how I went into it, was just looking for kind of the best value available at the picks and rounds we were going. Kind of kept an eye on where people who I wanted, what their ADP was looking like in other leagues, which was pretty handy since we were well behind most of the other leagues in our drafting. So that was, I was able to kind of cultivate some information on their ADPs and where people were going and use that as to piece together the team that I put together. And I like it. I'm pretty happy with how the squad turned out. My biggest reach, or sorry, best value was Yasiel Puig. Took him 75th, which was 23% lower or higher, I guess, than the rest of the leagues, which is pretty good, particularly with him being in Great American Ballpark. I feel spectacular about that pick. Biggest reach is also actually combined into my favorite pick, because coming into round 4 and 5, all catchers on the board, since we're playing NFBC rules this year, it's a two-catcher league. So we scooped up the best two available. We went with Gary Sanchez and JT Realmuto back-to-back and covered the catchers. And as you guys know, I love catchers. So I was pretty stoked that we took a chance and just went back-to-back the first and, you know, two catchers off the board. And we were picking 15th, so the picks were on the turn back-to-back, which was fun. So those are my favorite picks.
I like it. I mean, minus, you know, the saves, obviously, but overall, I still like your team.
Thanks, friend. How about yours? What was your strategy and such?
Me? Are you talking to me?
Yeah, you, the one who was just talking.
Yeah. My strategy, I tried to really go, tried to have a really round squad, not as in, like, physically round, but, like, rounded, like, made sure I was competitive in every category I could. Some things that ended up happening because of that is I got Paxton as my ace, because pitching just flew off the board and I was pick 15. And so by the third round, Paxton was as close to an ace as I was going to get. So I grabbed him, and there's obviously injury concern there, but we'll see. Because overall with my pitching, my philosophy was whip over ERA. So I ended up getting guys like Bieber, Hill, and Porcello. And just really focusing on whip as my main strategy instead of ERA. So hopefully that works. saves, I didn't do so well either. I ended up grabbing Will Smith and Michael Givens and then Andrew Miller. So I'm hoping that, the three of them pick up enough saves for me to remain competitive. My two favorite picks that I made, I grabbed Gallo in, pretty late, the seventh round. So that was quite nice. Got Woodruff and Burns back to back. And then I did Lau and Lowe back to back. I drafted Brandon Lau and Nathaniel Lowe. And I'm quite pleased with the Lau pick because of the recent signing. So also Max Fried, because he's good. Right, Jake?
That guy sucks.
He does not suck. You suck. He's great.
I'm with Jake on this one.
Oh my god, you guys are so wrong. Wait till you see that nasty curveball from left hand side. He throws like 93.
Yeah, it's really gonna hurt when we get plugged by that 85 mile an hour fastball.
Oh my god, he does not throw 85. You throw 85.
Oh no, I wish I threw 85.
Anyways, that was my strategy. Jake, what did you go in with thinking?
So I'm not someone who plays roto leagues almost ever. Usually play head to head, and usually play in dynasty leagues too. So I don't play a whole lot of redraft. So this was very unfamiliar for me. So I made a very strong effort to try and draft a well-rounded team, because I think that's something you can get away with in head-to-head, is, you know, not focusing so much on all the different categories. And things that I tend to ignore when I'm drafting in leagues that I'm familiar with is speed. I really don't chase speed much. I will oftentimes wait on pitching a little bit longer. Saves. Kind of like Keaton, I will often wait on saves because, especially in a dynasty league, that's just something you find later. However, here I felt like I needed to be more aggressive. So I took two out of my first three picks. My second and third round picks were actually pitchers in this league. I went Snell and Kluber back to back, which was a little unusual for me. And I tried to draft players with speed. However, that quickly fell apart for me. After taking bets with the first pick, I just kept missing on guys who had a speed component to their game almost every time. So I really didn't end up with much speed on my team, which is certainly going to be the biggest weakness. In terms of my biggest value, or is it value or reach? Which one of these do I do first?
Whatever your heart desires.
By the numbers, my biggest value was Corey Kluber, who I got at 21% better than the average. I got him in the third round with the 32nd pick. But I actually think that my biggest value might have been Randall Grichuk, who I got all the way down at pick 212. And I think that Grich is a guy who's going to play every day and hit 30 home runs. So I think he's going to be really valuable in this format. So I was psyched about getting him. My biggest reach, the computers tell me it was Odubel Herrera, whom I picked 209, which is 15% higher than other people. But again, I kind of feel like it was Josh Donaldson, whom I picked 89th overall. Josh Donaldson's a guy I own in a ton of leagues this year, and someone who I think is going to return really high value. I took him in the sixth round. I think he's going to have a huge year, and I like that he's on a one-year deal. And my favorite pick is definitely Brandon Woodruff, because I took Woodruff, let's see, I took him all the way down in the 22nd round, 329th overall. And I think that that is going to end up being one of the better picks that I made.
So overall, how do we feel about our squads? The league champion, overall champion, contender? Jake, where do you feel your squad sits?
I don't have my usual bravado with this particular team, just because I'm so unfamiliar with the format. But I do think that I'm going to be in the running to win my league. That's my goal. My goal is certainly not to, you know, be one of the better teams in the entire tournament. But if I could win my league, I'd feel really good about that. And I think I constructed a team that can do it.
I agree. I think I'm in the same place. And this team, so I was actually the only one from the Dynasty Guru that was in it last season. Paul was in it last season, but it wasn't for the Dynasty Guru, so we're not going to count him. And my draft was terrible. It was a freaking nightmare. I took a lot of chances on guys that did not pan out. I kind of panicked because, like you said, Jake, normally I don't do roto and I don't do redraft, and this was both of those. And I just had a god-awful draft. So I feel much better about this squad, and I think that I can contend for the league title in League 18 and maybe finish the best out of all of the TDG writers we got going here.
Well, you're wrong because I'm going to finish above you. But I feel really confident about my team. I expect to be in the running to win my league, and I'm hoping to place within the top 50 of the whole dig. So I feel pretty confident. I like my team a lot.
I would say you are confident. Yeah.
Patrick finished 54th on their rank projections. I finished 150, and you finished 274, Keaton.
Oh, yeah. the pitching staff that I have is all luck. It's either going to work, and it's going to work like a charm, or it is going to be an absolute disaster. But the projections do not like my pitching.
Yeah, that's for sure. Patrick, it has you being weak in runs and wins, and it has Keaton. Where are you? You are... has you weak in... ooh, a lot.
Yeah, the pitching staff is going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, basically has you as really solid in home runs and runs.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And everything else is kind of a weakness. And for me, it has me weak in home runs, runs, RBI, and stolen bases, and strong in everything else. So, which is weird because, like, I think they're assuming that guys who I think are going to have good years are going to have shit years. Like, I think they're assuming that we're not going to get a big season from Josh Donaldson and George Springer and, like, a lot of the guys that I drafted who I think are going to supply my power. So, it just, who knows? We're going to have to see.
Yeah, well, you know what they say about computers.
What?
Fuck them.
They were made to be broken.
Oh.
Oh.
That's much nicer.
Yeah.
All right, so that's a good segue into the wonderful Dynasty's Child Listeners League, and so I'll kick it off again with that. But one thing we did want to know, all three of us noted that the fun part about drafting with a bunch of people who listen to your fantasy advice is that they end up taking all the players that you want. So this made for a very interesting draft, and a lot of guys that we thought we could get later went a lot earlier, and we were kind of bummed about. I lost out on my boy, Vidal Brujan. I was a little broken up about that, but, you know, we soldier on. As far as a strategy for this one, I had absolutely none. I had a couple people reach out to me and ask me what the fuck I was doing in this draft, because I started off with five of my first six picks were pitchers. And my strategy was I just wanted to get guys that I didn't have shares of that I really wanted to own. And so my draft started out as such.
I was a little concerned for you. I was like, what are you doing with all these young pitchers? You're just asking for a heartbreak.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. I went with Bregman first. So I was drafting this 20-team league, 5x5 with saves plus holds and OBP. And so I was drafting from the 9-hole. First pick, Bregman, felt fine with that. And then I rattled off Walker Buehler, Jack Flaherty, Michael Kopech, Brent Honeywell, all just in the next group of picks because I wanted to own them. So I reached super high to get them and really baffled several people with what that approach was. But and then I followed it up with Austin Meadows and Francisco Mejia and AJ Puck. So I don't even know how to exactly describe what I did with this draft, but it just, throughout the entire draft, it was just hashtag get your guy. That was pretty much my approach to this one. So my biggest reach, it's probably all of those pitchers, I would say. And then my favorite picks is, again, probably all those pitchers. So I'm ready to have a blast in this league. In a couple of years, when they're all playing,
I sure like your pitchers.
What's that?
I really like your pitchers.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. As long as they don't all die.
Yeah, you're definitely going to lose one of them. You're going to get heartbreak somewhere. Your team is really interesting to me. I love my favorite pick you made is Gurriel Jr. I think. That was kind of a late sneaky grab. Yeah, you got my boy Teoscar on there. Your boy Austin Meadows.
Yep.
How's that Greg Bird share going to work out for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, apparently he's going to make the opening day squad. So
he is?
I guess there's that. Yeah, I saw that even though what's-his-face said that only one of them was going to make it, They both, Voit and Bird, both had really good springs, and now they're going to carry them both.
Interesting. Well, then the Voit-Bird drama continues.
Yep. I also believe I'm rostering in total six catchers between my major league and minor league.
Your draft is like, what way can I hurt myself? In what way can I hurt myself? Let me get all the catching prospects and all the pitching prospects and then just break my own heart.
Oy. Yeah, this is going to be fun. I'm just having a blast. I'm happy to be here.
I went typical Patrick in this draft where it was bats, and then went with pitching late. Took a lot of chances on young pitchers, kind of hoping, swinging for upside with them. I really like my team as a whole. I think it's pretty well-rounded. Obviously, my bats come first, but took some chances on some young pitchers like Corbin Burns, Brandon Woodruff, I don't know if you noticed, Jake, but I drafted Max Fried just so you could be jealous that he's on my team.
It worked so well. I've been shaking my fist at you since.
My team name is No Dynasty Ulfer Old Men, also inspired by Jake, because Jake just drafts old men.
Your whole team is an affront to me.
It is a little bit, in some sense, yes. But I went with Acuna, third overall. I just think that he's got the speed and power balance that's right underneath Betts and Trout, and worth a third pick. I got Voit on my team. I got a lot of the Patrick Magnus staples. Jesus Aguilar is on my team. Really like Drag. I think I got Seager in the third round or fourth round. Pretty happy with that. And prospects are kind of meh, to be honest with you. But I did score Darwin's and Hernandez on the pod live, so I'll take it.
Yeah, that was awesome. That's a good pick.
Thanks.
Your team is befuddling to me, but you drafted the anti-me team, so I think that is something that was very much on purpose.
Yeah, I mean, no dynasty for old men. Yeah, it is the anti-you team for sure. I think that I'll do well offensively. I really need things to break right with my pitching to have any chance. Colin McHugh has got to be good. Ronaldo Lopez has got to be good somehow. Kenta Maeda needs to pitch the entire year. Corbin Burns can't struggle at all. You know, my pitching is a mess. But if it breaks right,
pitchers, Patrick, I got you.
Well, he does. I got he some. Really does have I did get some late deals. I thought. In Barreto and Didi Gregorius, I thought those two guys, they fell quite late. Didi especially, I have him in my top 10 for dynasty shortstops, so I got him quite late. I know he's injured, he's gonna miss half the season, but it felt like a steal to me. So actually, you know, if you're looking for a young shortstop, Keaton, maybe we can make a deal.
I'm currently starting Dansby Swanson.
Well, maybe we can make a deal.
My team name is Hambone Fake Namington, which again is a BoJack Horseman reference.
I got that one because of the picture.
I think I liked how my draft went quite a bit in this league. I ended up getting Juan Soto with the 10th pick in the draft, which I was just super psyched about. My strategy going in, which is usually my strategy for dynasty leagues, but I think I was a little bit more aggressive with this time, was to try and get a well sort of balanced team between productive players now and stocking it with really strong prospects. And usually I don't focus as much on prospects as I did this time, but I was just kind of going with what the draft gave me. After Soto at 10, I got Snell in the second round, which I was stoked about. And then I drafted some really solid bats, Rizzo, Springer, Votto. Following up, Votto was actually my favorite value pick, or my favorite pick, I should say, because I got him in the fifth round, 90th overall, which I thought was really low for him. Also, my best value pick was probably Kershaw, who I got 111th overall because people were just petrified of him. Yeah. That was the sixth round. And my biggest reach, but I don't care because I love him, was George Valera. I got him in the ninth round, 170th overall. But I think that if I hadn't taken him there, he would have been gone.
You're right, on the very next pick, which was mine.
Yeah. and this is with Valera in the ninth round is where I started being super aggressive. So after Valera, I took Jonathan India in the 10th round, Trevor Larnach in the 11th round. Then I took one pitcher. And then in the 13th round, I took Mark Vientos. 15th round, Jazz Chisholm. 17th round, I couldn't believe he was still there. I took Matthew Liberatore. And then I ended up taking Brian Rocchio in the 20th round, Tristan Casas in the 21st. I have an absolutely stacked farm system on this league. And a lot of these guys that I got late, I like too. I like Andrew Kisner. I like Brady Singer, Santillan, Will Smith, Hans Kraus, Parker Meadows. I have a really super stacked farm, so I'm psyched about the way the team panned out, and I think I have the ability to win it this year and years to come. So job well done for me on this team, I think.
Yeah, I like your balance too. It's really good, and particularly with Valera and Liberatore, those were both guys I had at the top of my queue that you took and sniped me on the very pick before I was going to get them, and I was kind of bummed about that.
You know what? In retrospect, Keaton, the guy who I wish I took when I took India is the guy who you took directly after, which was Joey Bart. I wish I had taken Bart instead of India.
I love Joey Bart.
I know you do. You own him in every single league I'm in with you.
Yep.
I wish I could own him in every single league, but I'm in those leagues with Keaton, so.
Yep.
Patrick, were you surprised on how aggressive I was on prospects in this league?
I was a little surprised. I'm not quite as high on your team as you and Keaton are. I like your bats a lot, and I love your farm system, but I think your pitching is kind of suspect outside of Snell, obviously. But Julio Teheran and, you know, Rick Porcello, as much as I love him, you know, that's a 4 ERA or close to it. You know, I'm not a believer in Mike Minor. So I kind of feel like your starting pitchers are suspect, which obviously you can move these prospects and maybe get yourself something better. But love your bats, though.
Thanks, man.
So, Jake, what's your team name?
I think it's going to have to be that Korean baseball ad.
Big ball chunk of time. Big
ball yes. chunk of time. Absolutely.
I like it.
Yeah.
Now we'll wrap it up with some rapid fire listener questions. First up, Evan asked, is Patrick okay?
Sort of.
Okay. Yancey asks, are we alone? To which I say 100% no, we are not.
Probably not.
I'm with you.
Ethan asks, is Fernando Romero worth owning? In very, very deep leagues, maybe 20 teamers, sure. He has interesting stuff, but he has way, way, way too many walks. He just hasn't gotten better with them. So until he does, I would stay away in shallower leagues.
Could be an interesting arm in the bullpen there. Multi-inning relief could help in ratios and strikeouts. But I'm with Keaton. You need to be it's got to be a really deep league, and you need to watch him. I would have him probably start him on my bench.
Jake, thoughts?
I agree with Keaton.
Fantastic. Jay asks us, best case scenario for Joe Adele and Chris Paddock. I would say best case for Chris Paddock is a Cy Young. Seems fair.
Yeah, I like it. Seems a little aggressive, but yeah, I mean, best case for Paddock, I think, is, you know, 150 innings of amazing baseball.
Yeah, bunch of strikeouts, keeping the walks low, 3.5 ERA. Seems pretty good.
One thing to note about Paddock, though, is as excited as we are about him, he didn't throw a ton of innings last year, so he's going to be on a pretty strict innings limit, I'd assume.
Aren't we all on an innings limit in life?
Yeah, I definitely feel that way.
I'm not.
Joe Adele, anybody thoughts on him?
No, not really. I mean, he's a fantastic baseball player. I'm worried about the Ks. He needs more time in the minors, in my opinion. I don't think he's ready for major leagues. So if he was to get the call this year, I'm not expecting him to be a dominant force in the majors.
I agree.
Yeah, he's not. I don't think he's going to get the call this year.
Dan in Toronto says, "Hey guys, I play in a 14-team keeper league, and I'm looking forward to 2020. And would like to know which players currently outside the first two rounds could you reasonably expect to make the jump next year? For me, we already talked about one of them, George Valera. I think he's going to make a massive jump next year. Probably not be in the majors in 2020, but I expect him to be. Shoot, Jake, what did we?" We both said like maybe top 25 prospect in the game this point next year.
Yeah, I think that's very safe to say.
I think he's going to take a massive jump. And my boy, again, for like the eighth time on this pod, Vidal Brujan. Did take a jump.
Are we sticking with prospects?
I don't know. However you want to interpret it.
Okay. I like Zach Collins to be a major league catcher next year, as early as next year.
That's a good one.
And I think in OBP formats, you could see him his stock rise quite a bit.
Ooh, I got one then. Matt Thace.
Ooh.
I bet he's racking up some nice at-bats at first base for the Angels in 2020.
That's a good one.
Michael Chavis.
Chavis, baby.
Chavis. All right, well, that'll do it. That's the pod. The pod is now over.
The pod is over. CD skipping. It's that same voice repeating. You against me, anybody? No? If it's not Eagles, we don't care. All right. Keaton, you want to wrap up this pod?
This has been Dynasty's Child, part of the Dynasty Guru website. I've been your fill-in host because Patrick didn't want to talk, although he did want to sing. You can find all of us at the Dynasty Guru, where I just released my latest Keaton reel, which was my StatCast darlings, people that StatCast thought should have been better, and I kind of dug into a little bit as to why StatCast thought they should have done better, and maybe they will, maybe they won't. We also released the triple play for Baltimore on Tuesday, and we have the triple play for Boston coming out this Tuesday. Jake, what the hell do you have going on?
Well, funny you should ask. As you are listening to this podcast, the Locked On Red Sox podcast will have launched. It launches on the 25th, so... just about to launch. I record my first one tomorrow, so I'm super stoked about that. So that's going to be coming out every day. And then these two fools are going to be joining me on the Red Seat podcast, which is going to be weekly. And we got lots of Red Sox talk, so get on it. Get on it, people. Follow me.
Patrick, what are you doing?
I'm going to be on the Red Seat eventually, weekly. And just writing those triple plays and tweeting about how mad I am about the music and that Major League Baseball plays over great moments.
And Adam has also been living that TP life with us. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find Patrick at the Green Magnus. You can find myself at the Spoken Keats. You can find Jake at Dev Jake, and you can find Adam at the StatCast Era. That is going to do it for us. It's done. You can stop listening. But as always, be the best bird dog you can be.
Caca.
Rough.